centers? Okay. Good morning. Welcome to our small group discussion. I am Lewis Krause. This talk will be on Workplace Personal Assistance Services, its present and its future. And I want to acknowledge the work of my co-authors, Lita Jans and Joan Ripple, as well as other members of our team at InfoUse, Susan Stoddard and David Lennard, and the team at the Job Accommodations Network, DJ Hendricks, Lou Orsleen, and Sita Mistra. This paper is part of the Center for Personal Assistance Services based at the University of California, San Francisco. The center has just commenced a second 5 years of funding from the National Center on Disability and Rehabilitation Research. Here's my disclosure slide. I have no financial relationships, and if we actually find any related to workplace past, maybe that'll be a good thing. Definitions of PAS can be confusing and can be more so when talking about it in the workplace. This is our working definition. Workplace PAS includes task-related assistance at work, such as readers, interpreters, help with lifting or reaching, reassignment of non-essential duties to coworkers, and other help related to performing work tasks, and may include personal care-related assistance, such as helping someone with eating, drinking, or using the restroom while at work. The items listed are just examples, however, and can include work-based supports specific to a disability, which may be particularly important in the case of psychiatric disabilities or intellectual disabilities, where support of another person is crucial to understanding and succeeding at work tasks. At the start of the center 5 years ago, there was not much known about workplace PAS. We knew that PAS is dealt with as an accommodation in companies, as pointed out from this quote in 2004, where PAS is part of the accommodation spectrum, and there's currently a growing awareness of the needs of PAS at work. But we know less about the need and use of workplace PAS than we know about assistive technology as an accommodation. The issues driving workplace PAS, there's a lack of employment of people with disabilities age 18 to 64. We know from ACS 2006 that of those age 18 to 64 in the U.S., people with a disability are employed at less than half the rate of those with a disability, 36.4% to 77%. And while the unemployment rate is not vastly different, 5.6% for people with a disability and 4.5% for people without a disability, the real story is who is not in the labor force, meaning those who are not employed and not looking for work. More than half of people with a disability are not in the labor force, 58%, compared to less than one-fifth of those with no disability, 18.5%. In fact, about 14 million people with a disability age 18 to 64 were not in the labor force, and that's 31.5% of all those not in the labor force age 18 to 64. A second issue is the aging of the workforce. The baby boomer generation is getting older. Organizations want to retain special hard-to-replace skills and knowledge held by more tenured employees, and the potential for uncertainty for individuals as to when it's best to retire, sound familiar, make for a workforce that is aging. Aging workers will start to need services and technologies to allow them to continue to work. A third item, workplace injuries and illnesses, create a situation where companies want to provide services and technologies to allow valuable employees to continue to work. A fourth issue, transition of students with disabilities into the workplace will provide a new supply of new workers ready and capable of working, but possibly in need of services and technologies. And fifth, as people move out of institutions and into independence, there will be a logical next step, employment and self-sufficiency. There will be a need for PAS in the workplace for this population. Several public policy efforts have shaped the context of workplace PAS. The ADA provides that employers with 15 or more employees must make reasonable accommodations for qualified workers with disabilities. It mandates that employers provide benefits to or take steps to respond to the needs of individuals so they are able to perform essential job functions. Work task-related PAS is emphasized in this act, but it particularly stays away from personal care types of services. The recently enacted ADA Act amendments of 2008 do not change the definition, and it's unclear whether the ADAAA will have any particular impact on workplace PAS. WEA, the Workforce Investment Act of 1998, established one-stop employment and training centers to provide services and supports for all workers, including those with disabilities. The Ticket to Work and Work Incentives Improvement Act of 1999 reducing the disincentive to work by making affordable health care coverage available to persons with disabilities through Medicaid buy-in programs, and they also established the Medicaid Infrastructure Grants, the MIGs, which support states to provide services to support working persons with a special emphasis on personal assistance services. And as of 2007, 41 states have at least started a planning process in some facet of PAS. And finally, the New Freedom Initiative of 2001 was aimed at helping Americans with disabilities by increasing access to assistive technologies, expanding educational opportunities, increasing the abilities of Americans with disabilities to integrate into the workforce, and promoting increased access into daily community life. We do know some information. We have some older information about the need for PAS in the workplace. As of the 1994-95 NHISD, only 1.1% of workers with disabilities reported needing PAS for job tasks, and only 0.7% reported receiving it. Given we know that the number of workers with disabilities is already low, this shows that at least in 1994-95, there was a very low need for workplace PAS. Given this context, the Center for PAS, through the efforts of InfoUse and the Job Combination Network, conducted telephone surveys with employment system professionals, with PAS users, and with employers to try to discover more about this area. And before I tell you about that, I wanted to give you a little bit of our observations, our experience in recruiting and conducting interviews, and covered a few items. First, extra recruiting was needed to find private organizations that know anything about PAS. They were aware of the ADA requirements, but few of them had any experience in it, and fewer still knew anything about personal care. It's easier to find federal and state agencies that were experienced in PAS than corporations. We also needed extra recruiting effort to locate PAS users in some areas, in particular those who worked in private organizations or in non-disability settings, non-disability-related settings. It also took extra effort to recruit people of color. And the other observation, as we've said before, it's a small percentage of the working world, and it's not that well known. Employment service providers, or ESPs, are organizations that promote employment of people with disabilities, such as public rehab agencies, private employment agencies, and placement services, one-stops, some CILs, and some disability-specific organizations. Our interviews with 19 ESPs uncovered these following barriers, like finding a way to pay for PAS, red tape and lengthy waits, especially in government jobs, to get PAS, and the difficulty in obtaining long-term PAS. But they felt like ESPs themselves, they could work with the PAS users to build confidence and encourage self-sufficiency, self-advocacy. They could support positive job-appropriate relationships with PAs, and they could foster an understanding among the employer, the employee, the PA, and coworkers. ESPs also felt like they could work with employers to identify attitudinal barriers about PAS or disability and educate them on it. They could build on successful accommodations outcomes. They could provide awareness training to coworkers, and they could involve employers at all stages of arranging PAS. Excuse me. Our interviews with the 58 PAS users reported employers to be more familiar with task-related PAS than personal care-related PAS. They reported the need to search for their own funding sources, such as public benefits, employer coverage, personal pay, Medicaid, or private insurance, or some combination of all of those. They reported a wide variation in waiting times to receive PAS, from immediate to sometimes years. And they reported having to deal with the attitudes of supervisors and coworkers when they requested or received PAS, as well as their own attitudes about whether they wanted to even request PAS. In some cases, they didn't want to rock the boat, they didn't want to jeopardize their job, they felt like either of those were possible if they even requested it. We conducted interviews with 36 employers representing for-profit, government, and nonprofit organizations, large, medium, and small employers, and they represented 12 industries. And employers noted that barriers fell into three areas: costs, attitudes, and company structure. In costs, there are perceived costs to the employer. This is going to cost me so much money to do, I'm not going to do it. to the work unit, this is going to come out of my bottom line. That's going to make us look bad. And the risk or insurance of another person at the location, especially for personal care. In terms of attitudes, there are the coworker attitudes. Hey, I want some help too. And supervisor attitudes. Well, you're just slacking off. Come on, you don't need that. Let's just get to work. As well as other employee attitudes, as I mentioned before. In terms of company structure, there are barriers in employee preparation and awareness, waiting times for PAS accommodations, the space needs for additional person, and some other sundry items such as security clearance requirements. One of the resources for employers and PAS users to turn to for accommodation information is the Job Accommodation Network, JAN. And during the center, JAN conducted a survey of 1,182 employers who had contacted their service. And this research was done by JAN and the University of Iowa. And in this survey, the PAS was reported by 69 of those employers who contacted them. And those call, in terms of those calls, more of those calls on about PAS were about job at, were done at job application, 17%, than for non-PAS related calls, which were only 4%. The calls about PAS were less for the current employee, 65%, than non-PAS calls, 83%. Workers were more work limited than the non-PAS calls, both before and after the accommodation. The median one-time costs were $100 for PAS and zero for non-PAS. Usually that meant they rearranged the work schedule, and so it was a costless accommodation. The median annual costs were higher for PAS, $8,000, compared to non-PAS, $3,000. And the accommodations in both cases were judged to be effective, although slightly less for PAS. They found that the top direct benefits were for PAS, increased employee productivity, 2/3 of them, increased company diversity, almost 2/3 of them, and company retained a valuable employee, 63%. In non-PAS cases, the company retained a valued employee, that's almost 90% of them thought that. They increased employer productivity, 71%, and they eliminated costs to train a new employee, 58%. Now, there is hope. In-depth interviews that we conducted with employment professionals, PAS users, and employers revealed strategies for promising practices and overcoming the barriers to workplace PAS. In terms of costs, the practices that address employer costs included using a floating or shared PA. Several sites have variations on this. Some hire a person on staff whose primary responsibility is to assist the staff with disabilities as needed with work-related tasks or personal care. When this person is not assisting people with disabilities, he or she also can function as a receptionist taking calls or doing like clerical work. So that's why they're floating. A few organizations use outside contractors for cost and other reasons, also known as outsourcing. It's most familiar in the case of use of sign language interpreters. Organizations found funding from state or federal sources to assist in the funding of PAS, such as developmental disabilities money, VR money, and school sources for on-site support, or the use of state's Medicaid waiver to extend help to employees for funding of personal care PAS. For work unit costs, employers have centralized accommodations budgets. Some have a combination of both central and work unit accommodation budgets, where the department puts in $500 per accommodation, and then if it's above that, the rest is taken over by the central budget. In terms of attitudes, developing a corporate culture can influence attitudes by creating an understanding of the environment and coworkers' needs at the time of hire, as well as at staff meetings. Now, these can not only influence the coworkers, but also the employees with disabilities who might, for example, use informal PAS inappropriately. A few organizations spoke of general disability awareness training to try and convey the needs of people with disabilities to coworkers and their supervisors. In follow-along support, those with intellectual disabilities or mental illness prior to employment support staff educate and train the workers, the unit's coworkers about disabilities, and an on-site coordinator supports employees with disabilities and their managers when needed, when the employee's job changes, or when the employee is promoted. For practices that deal with company structure addressing employee preparations, specific job training includes personalization of training, especially to people with intellectual disabilities or mental illness. The task is broken down and training is based on the person's capability. The employer assures that an external group has access to the work area to provide guidance and training to the coworkers. A multidisciplinary team is one that monitors and supports employees with acute or chronic conditions or disabilities. In this one instance, this team included 10 professionals: occupational health nurse, a licensed clinical social worker, a vocational rehabilitation consultant, a mental health specialist, an intake coordinator, and a person with HR background. Obviously, this is for a large organization. A couple of employers had extensive written policy manuals and job descriptions for PAs, providing a roadmap for how to request services. Some employers had internal websites to assist with accommodations resources. In the case of the security clearance, we actually found an organization that allowed an employee they created clearances for PAs through trainings of all staff and the use of routine background checks, and the cost was actually nominal. For people with mental illness, some personal assistance is done in helping manage symptoms with cognitive cueing and other techniques to manage behavior on the job. So in summary, this is a relatively new issue, and it affects a small number. More data and research, though, is needed on the numbers of people with using PAS in the workplace, the cost to employers, and the impact of the state's MIG efforts. More clarity is needed on this language, the difference between the work tasks and the personal care tasks at work. And individuals, companies, and companies both face barriers to workplace PAS. The promising practices that I've talked about can address these barriers, but they must be widely promoted. And a brief comment about the future. The center has a couple of new research projects, an analysis of the California Survey of People with Disabilities to look at workplace PAS, AT job accommodations, and the employment outcomes, and a survey of Medicaid buy-in population in California to examine the impact of PAS, AT job accommodations, and employment supports on employment outcomes. Also analyzing the Medicaid claims data for barriers to employment, analyzing the National Long-Term Care Survey for AT and need for PAS, and reviewing federal and state tax policies. As I mentioned before, the ADA Act amendments of 2008, will they have an impact on workplace PAS? It's unclear, probably not. And then there's other pending legislation and regulations, and from our, at the center, Mike Oxford, who follows about the policies, he wanted me to tell you about a few items. Senate Bill 3327, the Empowered at Home Act. This bill does several things that could impact workplace PAS. It improves the features of the Deficit Reduction Act, state plan services, such as liberalizing income eligibility to equal that of the waivers at 300% SSI. It restores statewideness requirements and restores the ability of states to create and select other services instead of only being allowed to provide that services listed in original DRA. This would allow states to specifically tailor options that would cover the needs for workplace in the workplace. Two other sections of the Act, one system transformation grants, it could provide funding for states to research and remove barriers to workplace PAS. Section 3 would improve the quality and affordability of private long-term care insurance that could cover workplace PAS issues. And in the regulatory area, CMS has issued final proposed regulations about 1 month ago, implementing the state plan option of the Deficit Reduction Act that allows people to self-direct their services, including managing a cash allowance, that's cash and counseling. This could clearly cover services in the workplace. So those are some future items.
Thank you. Thank you, Luke. And now please welcome Betty Brown.
Let's see here. Okay. I was telling my husband.